everybody, and welcome to this week's AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the unofficial WWE podcast. Today is Thursday, July 29th, 2021. My name is Mimi Burris, and we are reviewing, we are discussing, we are communicating about Fight for the Fallen tonight, guys, and I am so excited to talk about a lot of the stuff on this show. There is a whole lot to get into, so without further ado, I'll shut up. We'll play the intro, and then we'll jump right on in. As always, I hope you have all had a wonderful week this week. I hope you've all enjoyed all the wrestling that we had going on this week, and I hope you all enjoyed Fight for the Fallen last night. I know I did. There were definitely some things we're going to talk about that weren't that great, and honestly, I think most of it is just placement of things, and I don't want to say bad booking, but just too much at once. You know when you have something like, you know when you go out to dinner and you order really good food? Like, you get a really good appetizer, and then you get a really good entree, and they're both just really good, and but you're stuffed after the appetizer, and then the entree comes, and it looks really good, but you're so stuffed, you can't even, like, begin to imagine how you're going to enjoy this, too. That's kind of how I felt about this show as a whole. But without further ado, guys, let's just get right into the card today and talk about the opening match, which was the match I was most looking forward to from what I saw online. It was the match that it seemed like most of you were looking forward to as well. And it was the 10-man elimination tag team match. We had Hangman, Adam Page, and the Dark Order, which were Alex Reynolds, Evil Uno, John Silver, and Stu Grayson versus the Elite, Doc Gallows, Carl Anderson, Kenny Omega, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson. And guys, this was a really good match. Was it exactly as great as I hoped it would be? No. And I think the TV aspect of that really took a lot away from this. I think, you know, it looked like, I think it was Stu Grayson, if I'm correct, almost looked like he got injured in the match and they had to call an audible with the count out. I don't know if that was the case, but This could have been a lot better than it was, but it was not bad at all. They did a lot of really good stuff, a lot of great story beats that we'll get into, obviously. And overall, I really did enjoy it, and I was excited. And guys, at the end of the match, I was heartbroken. I was heartbroken, and I think that definitely led into how I felt about some of the rest of the show, obviously. However, like I said, a lot of good stuff to talk about in regards to this match. Obviously, we had Alex Reynolds being eliminated first with the roll-up pin by Carl Anderson. Handful of tights. This got to be run roll-up in this match. There's 10 guys, obviously. And then we had Carl Anderson being eliminated by pinfall with the fatality from Evil Uno and Stu Grayson, which looked incredible, by the way. So much of the bet, I went back and like rewatched it. It was so awesome. We had Doc Gallows and Stu Grayson being eliminated by double countout, which I mentioned before. Evil Uno being eliminated by pinfall after the one-winged angel from Kenny Omega. And I really would have loved to see Evil Uno get a little bit more offense in. I mean, he's so over right now with the crowd. But nonetheless, I think this is a match that they can definitely go back to, Kenny Omega and Evil Uno. Obviously, they fought in AEW before, but I would love to see it again. Things are obviously totally different than they were the last time they fought. So, something I'm looking forward to in the future, obviously. We had John Silver being eliminated by pinfall with the BTE trigger from the Young Bucks. And then it was Hangman Page versus the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. And what a wonderful story these last like 5 minutes told. I was on the hook for every near fall on Page, on Omega. It was the great, great, great near fall after we had Matt Jackson being pinned with the Buckshot Lariat. We had an amazing near fall with the Deadeye. Deadeye, that's the name. I don't know why I drew a blank there for a minute. But yes, an amazing near fall on Kenny Omega from Hangman with the Deadeye. Two count, obviously. However, my heart broke, you guys, because Hangman would not stay down after a V-trigger. And after a bunch of awesome moves from both the Bucks, like I said, though, he did eliminate Matt Jackson. Keeps kicking out at two. We had that amazing story beat where Nick Jackson's grabbing the leg before he's going for the Buckshot Lariat, a throwback to Revolution of 2019. But then One Winged Angel from Kenny Omega after the whole title belt fiasco thing. Kenny Omega tried to hit him with one belt, and then the ref took it, and then he just grabbed the world title, the AEW world title, and hit him with that. We did get a kick out, but nevertheless, there was the One Winged Angel, and we got the 1-2-3, and Adam Page and the Dark Order lost the 10-man tag. And guys, I'm telling you, I was heartbroken. I know that there's a story to this and that they're going somewhere with this. So it's nice to be able to trust the company that this isn't just like heartbreak for heartbreak's sake. There's a reason behind this. And obviously we're going to get the match eventually. I really do believe that. But I can't be the only one that was like just depressed about this finish in a good way, though. And it's a weird thing to say, but it's the right story beat to tell. I never would have called this. I really thought the Dark Order and Paige were going to win, but if I were AEW, I probably would have put this on the end of the show as the last match, and then I would have had the Jericho match on a different show, or I would have saved this. I would have had this be the main event because, you know, we left this amazing, really well-done match. Like I said, I think it could have been better, but for the most part, it was really well done, and especially those last 5 minutes. I don't know if it was the TV time. I don't know what exactly threw them off, if everything kind of felt rushed, but from the entrances. I forgot to mention the entrances, guys. Oh my god, the Dark Order and Hangman Page's entrance was so beautiful, and you had that moment where they all stood up, and it was like the first time we really saw Hangman Page officially a part of the Dark Order. I mean, obviously, yes, we've had other moments, but that felt beautiful, like heartwarming stuff. And then these goddamn elite guys, like, coming out, basketball, what it was so good and cheesy and stupid because they're such a bunch of D-bags. So well done. Such good stuff, guys. I was so I was cracking up, but I also knew was like still rooting for the babyface. I was able to be entertained by heels, believe it or not, still not like them and still want the babyface to win. It is a possible thing in pro wrestling, and AEW like has brought it back because it's been so long since I've really had that. So really amazing entrances. Really good match. Did it reach 5 stars? No, not to me at least. We can ask Mr. Meltzer, but I don't really give a crap what he has to say. But yeah, no, not 5 stars for me, but definitely a great match and a good finish. It just, I wish they put it at the end of the show because, you know, after it, it took me a minute to recover from it. And I don't think I necessarily did. And I think the next match and the next couple segments suffered from that. Speaking of which, however, next up we had a backstage segment, and supposedly Death Triangle was supposed to be interviewed, but it was just Pac. He says that the Lucha Bros are not there. They're at the airport, but it seems that some anonymous individual canceled their car, and he says in his wonderful British accent that I was about to do an impression with, and then I thought better. Who could that be? And Andrade and Chavo Guerrero and the other dude with the tablet show up, and Chavo apologizes for the travel issues and says that they booked a limousine for the Lucha Brothers. Andrade warns Pac that he needs to be treating his associates better and says that if he doesn't, they'll start to work for someone else or someone who will. Not much to say about this, guys. Kind of dry. I was really hoping to see Rey Fénix on Dynamite again, Penta, obviously, and we did not. And fine, whatever. There's a storyline here somewhere. I'm not interested in comparison to the other stuff going on in the show. And like I said, we just came from that heartbreak, and then they gave me another heartbreak by not having Rey Fénix on the show. Next up, we had the FTW Championship Celebration. Taz is on some FTW podium in the corner, and then Ricky Starks comes out. He's got a big band of jazz players playing some New Orleans jazz on his way to the ring. He gets the mic. He says he loves the intro and says that Will Hobbs is out recruiting. Hope Will Hobbs is okay. I have a feeling he's not actually recruiting. But I did like that they addressed that because it was weird just to see him and Hook. Now, obviously, that Cage is not a part of Team Taz anymore. It was just the two of them. So I'm glad that they addressed that small thing. But he says that winning the FTW Championship and getting rid of the garbage that was Brian Cage felt awesome. that he's been the glue and the anchor of Team Taz since day one, and that he let a few things slide. He let the fact that Cage costed him some matches. He let the fact that Cage didn't check up on him. He let that go after he broke his neck. But it's when he realized that he's a selfish guy and he doesn't know the meaning of teamwork that he pulled the plug. Ricky says he knows how to be a star. He says Cage just has no charisma. And, yeah, couldn't even get an ounce of charisma to rub off on him. And then, of course, as we all suspected, Brian Cage comes out. He hits the trombone player, hits the drum player dude, and then smashes the drum over some guy and then goes and breaks a trombone with his leg. As you can tell, I'm not very interested in this, but he breaks the trombone over his leg. Stark runs away, obviously, with Hook, and that's the end of the segment, and it wasn't much because that's exactly what the deal was. This was unnecessary on the show that had all this great stuff going on. I just felt the same way I kind of felt about the Pack segment. Inessential, unnecessary, and yeah. That's pretty much all I have to say on it. I always ask, I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts. Are you more invested in this than I am? Because I am, I love Ricky Starks, and the pose and everything is so, I mean, he is absolute Ricky Starks. He's really going to be an absolutely huge star in AEW. I guarantee that. And I think that a lot of people online and from what I've heard are not giving Brian Cage enough credit. I think he has a chance as a good babyface here. He's got some silent charisma, I think. You know, he's got a good smile. He's got a good look. It's always weird when the big guy is the face and the little guy is the heel, though. So you have to do it really well. And maybe Ricky Starks can take some notes from Daniel Bryan, who played the little heel against Brock Lesnar, I guess, like so well. If anybody remembers that match at Survivor Series, I think it was. Probably. Anyways, moving on now to something that felt super essential and necessary, if you want to call it that. We had a promo from Hiroshi Tanahashi talking about the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship match and promising to challenge the winner of tonight's match, which we will get to later on, obviously. And guys, I mean, for those of you, I'm not super versed in New Japan, but I'm versed enough to know who Hiroshi Tanahashi is, and this is big. So I am super excited to see not so much the match against the current IWGP United States Champion. I'm more excited to see the stuff that we're going to talk about again later on in the show with the Jon Moxley promo and all that. This is big. You got Daniel Bryan, you got CM Punk, you got Hiroshi Tanahashi. I swear the next one, you had Nick Gage, Brock Lesnar's next, guys. We cannot. Anything is possible right now in FTW. I don't know why I said that, because I'm about to talk about the match FTR versus Proud and Powerful. No, anything is possible in AEW right now. What? You know what I mean? That's all I have to say about this is what? And get excited. Fantasy book anything you want at this point, for fuck's sake. I mean, who knows? John Cena could come to AEW at this point, guys. You never know. I mean, CM Punk, 7 years of retirement, is coming back. Daniel Bryan. We got Hiroshi Tanahashi from New Japan. I don't know. I don't even know what to say at this point. But again, if you're super excited about this, let me know your thoughts. I forgot to mention that on the Twitter, at Mimi Burr. So shoot me an email at mimi.realwwepodcast@gmail.com. I've been getting some great DMs from a lot of you guys lately. We're just talking, just shooting the shit about pro wrestling. And I love that. So always, always open channels. Always love talking to you guys about all this stuff. Because turns out, it's hard to find a lot of people who like pro wrestling and are out of the closet about it, at least in my area. So with all that being said, as I just went on a really random spiel about things, the next match we had was FTR, like I said, Cash Wheeler and Dax Harwood versus Proud and Powerful. And another thing that should have felt so much bigger than it did, guys, this was so underwhelming is the best word for it. And I know there was obviously the injury with Cash Wheeler. I think, yes, it was Cash who got the injury with the laceration down his wrist. I don't know what exactly happened. Something with a turnbuckle, something nailed. It looked bad, nonetheless. And so they did obviously have to call an audible. However, I think that's probably a benefit to this match, because that really gives them a reason to run it back, because this was underwhelming, and I feel like I need to pull out my thesaurus to give you guys a different word, but that's the best word I can use to describe this. So, obviously, like I said, we had FTR having the win. And although we had the botch, we just didn't get the typical FTR finish. But we did have Dax Harwood dropping Ortiz with a brain buster for the 1-2-3. Post-match, We had Cash being tended to by the medics, obviously, outside the ring. And we had Dex checking on him. So, obviously, I hope Cash Harwood, that's not his name. Obviously, I hope Cash Wheeler is okay. Hope he recovers quickly. I hope it's not a big injury. And I hope they run this back. This really didn't even, from the get-go, didn't feel like it was going to be anything good or special, which sucks because the build was, I mean, the build wasn't like A+, but it was substantial. And, you know, AEW or Tony Khan, I don't know if Tony Khan's like me, just has really bad ADHD, so he's just like, have this, have that, have this, have that. But like I said at the top of the show, right, like, I here's my anecdote for you guys. I went to Chipotle today. I took this kid to Chipotle, not this random kid. I watched the kid, but I took the kid to Chipotle, and he gets like two whole bowls of food, like the bowls, you know, whatever, fine, no shame. But he's eating the second one, and he's like so stuffed, and I'm like, why are you still eating that? And he's like, well, because it's good. And I'm like, is it still really that good when you're just stuffing your face, man, at that point? To me, it's not. And this is what that match was like to me. It was the second bowl at Chipotle, you know. Too much of a good thing on one show is too much. And I'm not saying everything can't be good, but this was a big, substantial build to a big, substantial match. And it didn't feel like that. It felt like a mid-card, I don't know, like Matt Hardy Foundation feud. That's not their name, is it? I just say that every time. Nonetheless, guys, like I said, I hope they run it back. But speaking of not underwhelming, that's not a transition, but I'm going to do it anyways. We had a Britt Baker interview backstage, basically talking with Tony Schiavone. She was obviously with Rebel. She says Nyla Rose breaks but she still managed to tap her out with a broken freaking wrist. She showed, obviously, the broken wrist. And again, just like Cash Wheeler, hope she gets better as soon as possible. But the good news is, and I'm speaking from experience, you can do a lot with a broken wrist. I was a soccer goalie at a younger age with a broken wrist. It's not that debilitating as long as you have a cast on. I'm not saying she should wrestle, but you can do a lot with a broken wrist. She says she keeps getting hurt and Reba can't keep looking out for her all by herself. So it's time to get someone to look out for them. I don't know what that means. Does it mean we're going to have like a third member? I can't speak today, guys. We're going to have a third member of this, you know, is she going to have a stable behind her? I think the women definitely need stables in their division. I think that would definitely help build the division a little bit more. I don't know why they don't have that. It works, the tag team, the women's tag teams on Impact work really well for that brand, so who knows? I think it would be a good addition, at least in the women's division. For Britt Baker, I don't know. I don't know why they don't just turn her babyface if they're going to turn her babyface. I don't know why. This wasn't her best. She basically was like, you know, doubt. He's like, everybody doubts me, and then the entire crowd is chanting DMD with her, so they gotta decide. I say this every week. I just feel like I'm a broken record at this point, guys. They gotta decide what they want to do with her. If they're gonna keep her as a babyface or if they're gonna keep her heel. And if they're gonna keep her heel, they gotta do a better job at it because she's so awesome, you know? And after that, we had a special announcement from Tony Schiavone saying that AEW Rampage on August 20th will be in Chicago for The First Dance. They always have to put their little monikers on it. However, of course, as expected, we had CM Punk chants throughout the crowd, and we had Darby Allin and Sting backstage cutting a quick promo, essentially saying that something about the best in the world. I don't know. He said something about CM Punk in a way that wasn't saying the word CM Punk, and essentially we're getting CM Punk, guys, and I talked about this earlier on. Super exciting stuff, as I talked about Hiroshi Tanahashi, obviously, in the IWGP United States World Heavyweight Championship. That is a mouthful. But I said it all because I wanted a beautiful, perfect, beautiful transition into the next match, which was Hikuleo versus Lance Archer, who is obviously the IWGP United States World Heavyweight Championship. Boom. That's like, you know, it's like red leather, yellow leather, unique New York, IWGP United States World Heavyweight Championship. And this match was what it was, guys. I think, again, it was just a title match on a show that didn't need another title match. Or didn't need a title match at all, really. With the big main event and obviously the giant opening match. It just, like, I think Tony Khan just tried to do a little too much today, guys. But nevertheless, the ending of this match essentially was Lance Archer winning by pinfall. hit the blackout. They basically teased it a little bit throughout the match, and he retains the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship. Did it again. And, yeah, and I was uninterested in this match. I mean, again, big guys doing big guy things is fun, but I don't know anything about this Hikuleo guy, and I did watch The Road too, but it was a nice thing that they did for New Japan, and I will leave it at that. We had Cody Rhodes being interviewed in backstage in Gorilla, obviously sitting with the EVP. You see, they just put, like, on a Word document, like, AEW EVP and taped it up there. Anyways, but, yes, he's about to be interviewed, but no, he's not. Malakai Black runs up, nails him with the heel of his loafer, because you could see the red mark on his face later on. They start to brawl, Cody clearly dragging him up the steps and onto the stage, and, Malakai Black hits him with a big knee strike. A bunch of wrestlers and agents try to stop them. Again, continuing this thread that this is obviously not supposed to be happening. And they're doing a really good job at that. It's a small detail. It means a lot to me, at least. And then Fuego del Sol tries to intervene. And then, Black Mass, right to the face. Fuego del Sol goes down. Beautiful Black Mass. And this match is going on next week, guys, and it's probably the match I'm looking forward to next week the most, because the rest of the stuff didn't look nearly as exciting to me. So I am excited to see the follow-up, obviously, to the whole Hangman Page thing. But I don't know, guys. We got to get going on this women's division. There's a lot of stuff that still needs to be fixed. The crowd seemed a little not into this whole show as much as the last couple weeks, and I think it was really because of the disappointment in the first match, which is okay. I said before, the right booking, but just, I don't know, I would have put it on last and I would have put it on a different show than f***ing Chris Jericho versus Nick Gage. That's all. But nonetheless, we move on to our trios tag team match of the night, which was Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Christian Cage versus the Hardy Family Office. That's the name. I'm going to forget that next week anyways. And guess what? I really don't care, you guys. But it was Angelico, Isaiah Cassidy, and Mark Quinn. And a fun little fact for you guys, in case you were curious. I had, speaking of private party, I had, my fiance bought Chris Jericho's book because I don't know why she did that. She likes to read, and I think she's just trying to be a good fiance. I don't know. I think she's genuinely interested. You know what, guys? That's not the point. I don't know why I'm going on about this. Anyways, my point being is that this book, by the way, if any of you have Chris Jericho's, like, latest book, I already forget the name, is absolutely egotistical, moronic, crazy stuff. Like, really weird. However, like, you gotta read the book to get what I'm trying to say here. However, Chris Jericho has a match or a list of all of his favorite matches in AEW so far on there, and Isaiah Cassidy from Private Party is on that list. Super interesting. I mean, it's a list of, you know, your Hangman Page, Kenny Omega, John Moxley, Orange Cassidy, all your big names, and there's Isaiah Cassidy. So good for Isaiah Cassidy. And I guess my point of bringing that up is, guys, Private Party, and not to, you know, put anything on Angelico too, Angelico as well, but specifically Private Party, like a year or so ago, looked like they were going to be in a way better position than they are in now. And I just feel like they get lost in the sauce with this whole thing, but Private Party are really talented. And I know they're green, but so are Varsity Blondes. And I would put Private Party underneath Varsity Blondes in the tag team pecking order right now. So, anyways, moving on to the match. This was, again, it was a good three-star trios match. It wasn't anything special. Towards the end of the match, we had Jungle Boy running in, does his hot tag, hits Luchasaurus, gets a bunch of moves off, tags in Luchasaurus, and Luchasaurus tags in Christian Cage. They get a choke slam to Quinn, and then Christian Cage hits the frog splash for the 1-2-3. Post-match, though, we have Christian Cage going out on the outside, celebrating, obviously, with all the fans. And out of nowhere, the blade comes in and nails him with the brass knucks. And can you guys tell by my tone of voice at this point how uninterested I am in this Hardy Family Office stuff? But whatever, there's a place for it on the show, I guess. I just wish it was on Dark and not on the show. And I wish the time that this match got went to the opening match. That's all. But that was the post-match. And I'll give Christian Cage this. He sold it really well. It looked really bad. It looked like he just sold it like he really just got punched in the face with brass knuckles. So, and I think, obviously, Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy played a good part in that. So, trying to find the positives, because fuck you, Logan Meyer. I can be positive, too. Well, when we come back, we have a video package from Nick Gage obviously the stuff from the Road 2. If you guys didn't watch that Road 2 and you already watched AEW, I don't care. Go back and watch that Road 2. I always talk about it, but they're always so well done. And Nick Gage is freaking awesome. So, and then we had Varsity Blondes and Julia Hart get a quick little promo where they just talk up how she's going to prove herself against Thunder Rosa tonight. Spoiler alert, she doesn't prove herself against Thunder Rosa. I mean, she does. She did a good job. It was fine. I think it was almost a little bit too long, honestly. But Thunder Rosa gets a quick little promo as well. They have the match. Thunder Rosa wins by pinfall after the Thunder, Fire Thunder driver. And that's the sole women's match on this show. So funny, I don't know, maybe they could have taken the Hardy Family Office crap out and put it on Dark and then give the women a little bit more attention than this. Maybe they have a squash match with Thunder Rosa and another women's match. Just an idea, I don't know. Maybe build your f***ing women's division, AEW. Come on, Tony Khan. All right. We have Jon Moxley cutting a promo next, though, guys. And this was probably one of my favorite things the entire night, because Jon Moxley cutting a promo is just, his style never gets old. I don't know what it is, guys. I don't know what it is, but it never gets old for me. So he's talking about the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship, obviously, and Hiroshi Tanahashi's promo earlier on in the night. He says, or he complains about the Olympians being able to go to Japan, the fact that he couldn't get into Japan lately. The second he loses the IWGP World I've been so good the whole show, guys. The second he loses the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship, Tanahashi shows up and says that he's ready to challenge for it. Essentially, obviously, initiating that he's scared of Jon Moxley. He says he doesn't even want to wrestle him. Screw him. You know, fuck him. I don't even want to wrestle that guy. And says he's dead to him. Sends a huge stack of contracts to Japan, and says that we'll see what comes through the forbidden door. And he had a great line in this promo too, and talks about how I am the forbidden door. It's just so good. It's just Jon Moxley stuff, and I'm stuttering over my words, and I would never be able to give any kind of repeating what he said gives it no credit, as you all probably know. Anyways, he says maybe Tanahashi's the only smart one who learned what happened when Nagata and Suzuki came and challenged him for the IWGP United States World Heavyweight Championship. I just caught a fly as I said that. That's some Karate Kid stuff right now, guys. And says, yeah, like I said, he says he's waiting to see what's on the other side of the forbidden door. And next we had the main event, the Chris Jericho versus Nick Gage 5 Labors of Jericho No Rules match. And guys, they beat the crap out of each other. There were light tubes. There was a glass table. Chris Jericho put Nick Gage with a Hurricanrana through a glass table. And honestly, this match was just what it was. It was a no rules match with Nick Gage. You weren't going to get a pro wrestling classic. But I think this definitely shows what an amazing buffet AEW can be. I mean, they had a no rules, essentially death match. We had a great opening 10-man elimination tag team match with this wonderful story being told. We had a great bunch of great promos throughout the match from, like I said, Britt Baker, which again, it wasn't her best, but she's still freaking Britt Baker. Jon Moxley, we had an IWGP United States World Heavyweight Championship match. We had a squash match, technically. There's a bunch, like, trios match, like, a very good range, very good buffet for all of this pro wrestlingness. And then obviously we have MJF on commentary throughout this match, which adds so much. It really added a lot in the first match, but this was great as well. Like I said, we had light tubes. We had stabbing of light tubes. We had a pizza cutter. We had all of it. And, you know, credit to Chris Jericho. Essentially, Chris Jericho or Nick Gage goes and has a bundle of the light tubes and brings them into the ring. But Chris Jericho blinds him with the mist, smashes the bundle over his head, and then hits the Judas effect for the 1-2-3. He's got glass in his body, guys. He's bloody all over. And Maxwell Jacob Friedman comes up on the mic, makes a CM Punk pipe bomb remark, obviously saying something about, as you still sit there in the most pain that you've ever been in, he knows that you're not going to wrestle me, especially knowing what labor number 3 is. He says that Chris Jericho's stipulation to labor number 3 is he has to hit a move off the top rope to win the match. But his opponent is somebody that came up in their previous encounter, and he puts the thing on the screen of 2019, obviously bringing up the promo, brings it back, guys. He is facing, the juice is loose. He is facing Juvin Guerrero. Why am I messing that up? I'm not even going to try tonight, guys. I'm not even going to try. The juice is loose, guys. Brings it back to WCW. Real nostalgic here for your friends here who are born in the 90s and the late 90s and were only babies while the Monday Night Wars and everything else was going on. Obviously, this isn't necessarily for me. I'm not necessarily the targeted audience, but I love the storyline still. This Nick Gage match was absolutely out of his mind absurd, so I'm super excited to see what's going on next week, and I'm sure they will fill me in enough on the road to, and I'll get plenty, all the information I need. AEW does a great job. Just because I am someone who was not alive, or I was alive, I guess, but wasn't really around, wasn't able to form words at that time. All I was saying was like a goo goo gaga, you know. I was essentially as useful as Lily at that point in my life. I didn't know about this match in WCW and this feud, but I'm still looking forward to it, and I know AEW will inform me with all the information that I need in order to enjoy the match even more. So, with all that being said, guys, AEW, was it a 5-star show this week? No. Did Chris Jericho compete in a freaking death match? Yes. Was the 10-man tag team match 5 stars? No. Was it a good 4-star? Absolutely. There is still so much juice, no pun intended, to be squeezed out of a lot of these feuds, and I'm just looking forward to it. And next week, guys, we're getting Malakai Black versus Cody Rhodes, and if Cody Rhodes goes over Malakai Black, you will see me riot. Obviously, stay safe, get vaccinated so I can go to Arthur Ashe Stadium, and so, you know, pandemic ends, that'd be good too. But really, I want to go to Arthur Ashe Stadium and go to that show, and if they have to cancel it because some of you bums won't get vaccinated, and that's not the only reason. I'm not a scientist. There's a lot going on in the world. I want to go to Arthur Ashe Stadium. Stay safe out there, guys. And if you're not already, subscribe on Patreon. It's like $1 a month. You get all these shows ad-free, or $2.99 on iTunes. You can get all these shows ad-free, exclusive shows. You all know the deal. Go check it out. And with all that, guys, I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week, and I will talk to you next time.